Due to the graphic nature of this haunted place, listener discretion is advised. This episode includes dramatizations of sexual harassment and murder, as well as brief mentions of domestic violence. We advise extreme caution for children under 13. Mr. Kanba had bought a castle for 23 yen, an absolute steal, if he said so himself. And the location wasn't bad either. It stood at the very center of the city of Himeji. Once the old fortress was cleared, he could create the most opulent hotel and bathhouse the Hyogo Prefecture had ever seen. 1869 was going to be his year. But first, everything had to go. The wood, the stone, all the strange little hiding places and defense points. His first concern, though, was the courtyard's well. There were no real walls to the well. Instead, it was surrounded by short stone columns to prevent you from falling in, or being pulled inside. He told himself not to worry. He made offerings at the appropriate shrines to keep the yurei away. The restless spirits of the departed should be satisfied. Or so he hoped. But even still, he couldn't stop thinking about that well. He was sleeping in the guardhouse when he heard it. Someone was sobbing. It echoed and grew as something scraped and clawed against wet stone, as if someone was climbing out of the well. Mr. Kanba hid beneath his blanket. He didn't want to believe it was a yurei. But then he heard it. Her. Counting, crying, shrieking. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then a scream. The sound thrummed in his ears. He didn't understand her distress or how to placate her. It started again. 1, 2, 3, 4. She counted as she grew closer and closer. Soon, she was standing over his blanket, a long shape silhouetted by the thin fabric. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. This time, Mr. Kanba had reason to scream, too. Welcome to Haunted Places, a Spotify original by Parcast. I'm Greg Polson. Every Thursday, I take you to the scariest, eeriest, most haunted, real places on Earth. You can find episodes of Haunted Places and all other originals from Parcast for free on Spotify. And every Tuesday, make sure to check out Urban Legends. These special episodes of Haunted Places are available exclusively on Spotify. This week, join me on a supernatural journey to Okiku's Well at Himeji Castle, the home of a Japanese folktale so terrifying that it is said to have inspired The Ring, and discover why, to this day, it's haunted. We'll approach a sinister stone well after this. Near the southern coast of Japan's Hyogo Prefecture stands the country's largest surviving castle. The stone and wood fortress has the distinctive appearance Westerners often associate with Japanese architecture. Dark sloping roofs with gold accents and stark white exterior walls. At a distance, its main structure looks like a water bird taking flight, earning Himeji Castle the name Shirasagi-jo, the White Heron Castle. The entire complex spans 576 acres and 82 distinct buildings. It displays the height of 17th century military technology, with semi-concealed platforms for ranged attacks and loopholes, hidden areas of the castle where fighters could conceal themselves to surprise invaders. But the White Heron Castle is more than a military installation. It remained the seat of government for the surrounding region for hundreds of years, from the late 14th century to the fall of the Shogun in 1868. Himeji Castle contains centuries worth of history, but one legend stands above the rest. It's a true relic of feudalism, the tale of a well-intentioned servant girl and her cruel samurai master. And it remains one of Japan's most haunting and horrifying ghost stories. Okiku didn't need to look away from her work to know that the samurai was in the doorway. Oyama was staring at her again. He cleared his throat, but she refused to turn. She knew he was smirking as he drank in her appearance. In the beginning, she tried to find refuge from him, but the hiding places in the castle were built for soldiers, not maids. And before long, she realized there was almost nowhere for her to go. So she evaded him as best she could, pointing out that she was a simple servant girl, that he already had an honorable and beautiful wife. But he told her he'd throw his wife aside in an instant, if only she'd take his hand. Okiku heard Aoyama stepping closer. She refused to let him interrupt her work. The lady of the castle had placed 10 precious plates directly into her care. She was to clean them and keep them safe, regardless of what her mistress's husband wished. Okiku froze as she felt his fingers brush across her cheek. He had never been so bold before. Her lip quivered as she asked him to remove his hand. She claimed that her skin wasn't clean enough, but he just moved lower. His breath touched the back of her neck. She wanted to scream, but all she could do was go limp to his touch. Frustrated, he moved his fingers from her neck. She could still feel his indentations against her skin. In her mind, they burned, painful and obvious to everyone. His hands then went to one of the delicate plates she'd been polishing. He caressed it the same way he had her skin, thanking her for taking such good care of them. Then, he shot her a smile. Okiku managed to pull her lips up enough to muster one back. Aoyama replaced the plate at the table and walked out of the room. Okiku watched him go, then continued to stare at the doorway for several minutes. When she was sure that he was gone, she reached into the bucket of soapy water and scrubbed at her cheeks with her hands. Later that night, Aoyama sat down to his dinner alone in the great hall. His wife was apparently indisposed, but he didn't mind. He reminded Okiku to make sure that all 10 plates were cleaned properly, then asked her to sit next to him. On quiet feet, she walked over and knelt next to his place at the table. Discomfort slithered through her, but she dared not move as he sat and ate his food. When he leaned toward her, Okiku held her breath. Against her ear, Aoyama whispered a marriage proposal. Okiku shivered, repulsed by him. She tried to pull away, but he held her arm. Then, with his breath still close against her ear, he thanked her for accepting his proposal. Okiku was stunned. She had said nothing. No mention of the proposal, no words at all. She tried to hide under tradition, saying that such an esteemed man such as himself would surely want an accomplished bride. He laughed. In no uncertain terms, he told her that he only wanted her. One wants what one can't have, he said. Propriety dictated that Okiku stay silent, but the look in his eyes scared her. She took a deep breath and told him the truth. While she was honored that he would consider her for a bride, she didn't think they would suit each other. Aoyama laughed, the sound growing more and more sinister. He gripped her arm tighter. She swallowed through the pain and continued to tell him the ways in which they didn't belong together. It wasn't just him, she explained. She was unsuited for anyone. She would be a better bedfellow to death than an actual person. For the first time, she was sure he'd actually heard her, that he'd actually understood that she didn't want to be touched and never would be. For the briefest moment, Okiku entertained the notion that after years of enduring these little moments of terror and frustration, Oyama might have finally seen the error of his ways. But he'd had a different sort of revelation. Oyama stood up from the table, dragging Okiku behind him. He moved through Himeji Castle with thundering footsteps. Somewhere, she heard the sound of dripping water. Okiku begged him to let her go, but he must not have heard her. Her body scraped against the floors. Tears leaked from the corner of her eyes. Servants and even courtiers emerged from their rooms as he pulled her through the hallway toward the front of the building. She knew they were all waiting to see what happened next. None of them would help her. When the doors to the courtyard opened, Oyama did not stop. Okiku begged him to have pity on her. Oyama said that this was pity. There were worse punishments for losing one of his wife's valuable plates. Okiku was stunned. She hadn't lost any plates. She had counted them just before dinner. All 10 were there. She always counted them. Unless he had taken one. Oyama told her that she hadn't looked close enough. But he wouldn't fire her. He was just sending her to new quarters. She tried to pry his fingers from her wrist, but he was too strong. Soon, the stone column surrounding the well came into view. Okiku's heart stopped. She knew where her new home was going to be. Oyama lifted Okiku up against his body. She kicked and struggled. Her voice shook as she told him this didn't have to happen. He agreed that it didn't have to, but it was what he wanted now. He lifted her even higher, stepping forward to the edge of the well. He kissed her forehead, then he let go. Okiku fell into the darkness, screaming. When she crashed through the open water, her neck broke. There are many versions of the story of Bancho Sariyashiki, or the Plate Mansion, in Japanese folklore. The legend holds that many centuries ago, a young maidservant named Okiku offended a samurai named Aoyama. Some say she foiled an assassination attempt he made on the lord of the castle. Others say he made advances on her that she did not reciprocate. Whatever the reason, he stole one of the 10 precious antique plates she was responsible for, then blamed her for its disappearance. When she still resisted his will, he flew into a rage. In some versions of the story, she accidentally killed herself as she ran from him. In others, he beat and killed her. Either way, Okiku's corpse ended up at the bottom of the well in the courtyard of Himeji Castle. Her spirit, however, didn't stay put. Up next, Okiku emerges. Listeners, if you love hearing about haunted places and their haunting histories, you'll love Parcast Network's newest original series, Haunted Places Ghost Stories. Haunted Places Ghost Stories premieres October 1st in its very own feed. Join host Alastair Murden as he retells the scariest, most hair-raising ghost stories ever imagined. These chilling tales were written by some of literature's greatest storytellers from all around the world, including Japan, India, the UK, even ancient Rome. Alastair brings to life stone-cold classics like The Kit Bag by Algernon Blackwood, a sinister account of a condemned murderer's final wish and the lengths he go to fulfill it. And The Miserere, a Spanish tale of a wandering musician who hears a terrifyingly beautiful song in a burned-out monastery and is doomed to capture its notes until he dies. New episodes air every week on Thursday. You can find and follow Haunted Places Ghost Stories free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget, October is our favorite month and one of our busiest, so make sure to search Parcast Network in the Spotify search bar to see all our new shows. Now, back to the story. In Hyogo regional legend, the tale of Sariyashiki recounts the tragic story of Okiku, a young servant girl who was unjustly punished by her samurai master, Aoyama, for losing a ceremonial plate. In the tale, Okiku is either beaten or killed, and her lifeless body thrown into a well. While many locations claim to be the source of this legend, the most well-known is one of Japan's premier tourist destinations, the UNESCO World Heritage Site, known as Himeji Castle. There in the castle's courtyard sits a well, surrounded by angular stone pillars, and beside it, a small sign reads, Okiku's Well. Despite her tragic death, Okiku would not be forgotten. Her name echoes in Japanese culture to this day. And as her tormentor would learn, even in death, she refused to be silenced. Aoyama didn't believe his servants when they told him the well was dry. But since the death of Okiku, they'd been acting strangely. They often lingered in the hallways and watched him from afar. He was not an unreasonable man, so he told them he would examine the well himself. Okiku's well, he called it in his head. He'd planned to have her rot there as a warning against disobedience. Except the girl's remains had disappeared. Aoyama hadn't been able to narrow down which servant had defied his wishes, but he would find out eventually. As he walked through the courtyard, he pictured her face. He had lived for every tiny look she gave him, that shy glance in her eyes. He could still feel the soft skin of her cheek against his fingers. She may have been gone, but the pleasurable feeling remained. Aoyama stared down into the well. The servants had been wrong. There was water. He lowered the bucket and drew it back up. It sloshed a little as he lifted it over the stone pillars, leaving a small pool on the ground. The water inside was viscous and cloudy. It smelled of rot. Disgusted, he went to drop the bucket back down the well. But then, he caught something out of the corner of his eye. A pale finger was poking out of the small puddle beneath his feet. Then, it scraped a dirty nail along the wet stone. Aoyama dropped the water in shock. Suddenly, the finger was gone. He shook his head. The tiny spill was too shallow for anything to be in it, much less a human hand. He muttered to himself as he picked up the bucket and lowered it back into the well. But just as it hit the water, a loud clicking noise came from beneath the surface. Aoyama peered over the side of the stone columns and into the well itself. It was impossible to see anything in the murky depths below, so he raised the bucket back up. There was a soft tug on the other end as he pulled it to the surface, but it still came. Aoyama dumped the bucket's contents onto the ground, and more putrid water gushed out. The smell burned his nostrils. He brought his hand to his nose, but as his gaze lifted, he saw it. Two mottled hands gripped the edge of the well, gray and blue with black spots, nails torn to the quick. The knuckles quivered as they clutched the slick surface. A long, dark shape rose from the other side, just visible through the gaps in the columns. At first, it looked like a cascade of seaweed, long and black. But it was hair. Okiku's hair had been lustrous in life, but this was oiled and heavy. Long strands swung like a curtain as she climbed up and over the pillars. Oyama's courage left him in an instant. He turned and ran for the Himeji Keep. He ran and ran, not daring to look behind him. And as soon as he crossed the safety of the keep's threshold, he ordered the doors to be locked behind him. From the comfort of his tower, he told himself that his imagination was playing tricks on him. He missed Okiku, that was all. She was dead. She couldn't rise from the well. It was impossible. When he returned to his chambers, Aoyama asked her the plates that Okiku had cared for so tenderly. He loved looking at them. They reminded him of her in better times. Not the one his imagination had conjured earlier today, but the real woman whose appearance had brought him so much pleasure. He touched one of the golden dishes, but it didn't bring him the same joy it usually did. As he studied it, a woman's features bloomed in its gleaming surface. Black hair spilled from the cold metal. He felt wet fingers grasp his shoulder. Oyama dropped the plate and whipped around. But he saw nothing. He looked left and right, all the while commanding himself to find his stoicism, his control. When his breathing finally slowed, he stepped forward. But then he slipped. A puddle of water had accrued in the middle of the floor. He scrambled up and lay back on his thin futon, his heart racing. Oyama didn't know what to think. Perhaps in her death, Okiku had learned to love him. Yes, that was it. And if she was prepared to meet him, he would do her the honor of welcoming her to his bed. He could give her that one precious plate he'd taken from her hands. It was supposed to be a wedding present. The sound of water came. Drip, drip, drip. It continued for several seconds, and then a pause. Oyama strained to hear something, anything, but nothing followed. Then, the drips began again. Drip, drip, drip. In total, he counted 9 before another pause. It dawned on him. 9 plates. The 10th was missing. But Aoyama realized the counting wasn't just in his head. Another voice was doing it for him. A woman's voice. 1, 2, 3, 4. The woman counted as she crawled toward him on all fours, inky, oil-slick hair obscuring her face. It was Okiku, a sick parody of his fantasies. He froze in fear. She crawled to the edge of his bed. A wooden clicking echoed through the room. She paused, head cocked unnaturally to the side, her dark eyes studying him expectantly. Her hand reached for his leg. Oyama let out a scream as she yanked him closer to her. Her breath smelled of rotten gums. Her teeth were gray like ash. From between wet strands of hair, he could catch glimpses of her once beautiful, now hateful eyes. She gripped him tightly. He begged her to loosen the hold she had on him, but she only pulled harder, her nails carving small moons into his skin. He felt the snap of his bones underneath her hands. Desperate to get out of her hold, he promised to give her the missing plate if she would let him go. Instead, she began counting quietly but quickly to herself. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oyama pulled the plate from under his pillow and offered it to her, his hands trembling. But Okiku opened her mouth and swallowed the plate whole, nearly catching his fingers in her teeth as she bit down. Aoyama tried to call out for help. The servants must have been watching from somewhere. They would put a stop to this. But his pleas were met with nothing but silence. And the dripping. 5 drips. 5 clicks. Another drip and click. Another. 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 Then came that dreaded silence, somehow worse than the unnatural rhythm that had come before it. Okiku's hair parted for a moment, revealing the whole of her face. Her expression was dark, yet resolved. It held a certainty Aoyama had never allowed her to have in life. Okiku's grip on Aoyama tightened. She dragged him across the floor and toward the door. He screamed and pleaded with her, but she never paused. After all, he'd heard her pleas. He'd known. He'd known she didn't want him, but he hadn't cared. Now, she didn't either. Unlike many vengeful ghosts or Onryo, Okiku is a Jibakure, an earthbound spirit. While some Onryo may pursue their betrayers and abusers across mountains and even seas, she is bound to her well, repeating the trauma of her death with disturbing and dangerous results. It is said that between the hours of 1 and 3 a.m., Okiku emerges from the well, sopping wet, with her long black hair covering her face and ghostly white dress clinging to her body. She begins to count the plates she is said to have lost, screaming in agony when she's unable to finish at 10. It is said that if you manage to shout 10 just before she calls out, she will rest for the night. But when the clock strikes 1 the following night, she begins again. Coming up, Okiku's story finds a new audience and new victims. Now back to the story. The story of Okiku and the Nine Plates is a widely known Japanese legend. The story of the vengeful ghost of the servant girl thrown into a well has been adapted numerous times in many dramatic traditions. It's appeared in everything from kabuki performances to modern-day horror films. But the first adaptation to be met with success was in 1741, when puppeteers Sasada Ichō and Tomonaga Tarope I premiered their Bunraku puppet version of the legend. Set in Himeji Castle, it remains one of the most influential versions of the story to this day. All of these adaptations tend to focus on Okiko's life under Aoyama's cruel scheming, rather than her graphic death. But there is one aspect of the legend that some adaptations appear to forget. Okiko's presence at Japan's famous Himeji Castle is what's known as a tatari. A complicated word to translate, tatari means something between haunting and curse. Japanese folklore is filled with tales of wronged yurei, or ghosts, getting revenge on a specific person. But Okiku seems unaware that she's defeated her foe, and is focused instead on punishing anyone who wanders near her well. She doesn't care where you came from or what your intentions are. She only wants you to feel her pain. The play was going to be called Bancho Sarayashiki, and Asada knew it would be wonderful. No one had done justice to the story he'd learned as a child, and he and his writing partner, Tomonaga, were finally going to do right by tragic Okiku. Asada naturally would play the wronged servant girl. The face and hands his craftsman had built for the Okiku puppet was exquisite, and Asada took tender, loving care as he created her body and clothes. Her beautiful face could be transformed into her angry ghost form with the flick of his finger. She was a true work of art. Asada and his company practiced for many days to perfect Okiku's story and movements, giving her grace and poise as she moved to the Taiyu's chanting and strumming of the shamisen. Asada manipulated her left hand and face, while his assistants Taro and Yosuke worked her right hand and feet, respectively. As the most junior member of the company, it was Yosuke's first performance as a major character. But Asada knew that the young man was as passionate about the story as he was. He had full faith that Yosuke would serve Okiku well. They had to add details, of course, and the samurai Aoyama could always be more villainous. They would add a rival for the samurai, and an assassination plot. The punishment of the heroine would be worse too. Torture, beatings, and drowning. All for the evil samurai's pleasure. The play would end with her rising out of the well as he looked on defiantly, letting the audience imagine her revenge. They were in the last days before the first performance, and Asada was far more nervous than he should have been. Something didn't sit right. Perhaps it was the choice of venue for the premiere. Rumor had it that Okiku's actual well was at Himeji Castle, far from their stage itself. But there were many wells that were said to be the actual site of her murder. Asada shook the thought from his head as he focused on his work. He vowed to get several nights of good rest before the big day. But that night, he was jostled awake by Yosuke. The young man was sweating, hair matted to his face. Asada asked him what was wrong. Yosuke stammered that Taro was bullying him. Asada groaned. He didn't have time for this, and Yosuke didn't either. Asada reminded him of that fact, but Yosuke insisted. Taro, he said, was lurking outside his window, wearing the traditional black hood and dark clothes they all wore for performances. Asada told him to just ignore Taro. Yosuke wasn't exactly happy with this response, but he agreed to return to bed. But the next night, it happened again. Yosuke came to his room and begged Asada to talk to Taro, or at least come see him standing in the courtyard, looking into Yosuke's window. Asada told Yosuke he would do no such thing. They were grown men, not children. They could work it out themselves. If he was bothered, he should walk outside and confront him. Yosuke shivered at the thought, but he said he'd just go back to bed. The next morning, Taro showed no evidence of being up all night, but anxiety and sleeplessness was clearly wearing on Yosuke. Asada pushed them both through rehearsals regardless. Their premiere was tomorrow, after all. But that night, Yosuke roused Asada again. Taro was closer this time, he said. Asada tried to tamp down his anger. He needed Yosuke to be functional in the morning, so he agreed, just this once, to calm him like the child he was being. Asada padded down the long hallway to Yosuke's room. It was small but elegant, a ground floor space lined by rice paper flats. He stepped further into the room when Yosuke pointed a shaking finger toward the window. Yosuke was right. There was someone there, or at least there appeared to be. He was wearing the traditional bunraku hood. Outside in the darkness, the material hid his face and form, just as it would in the theater to allow the audience to focus on the artistry of the puppets. The hooded figure stood stock still. Asada could not see his eyes, but he was sure they were staring at him. Someone had to be playing a joke. Asada turned to tell this to Yosuke, but the young man just pointed past him again and into the courtyard. Then, Asada heard a drip. The hooded figure was closer now, standing frozen, but certainly closer to the window. Asada kept his eyes on the man, calling out to him that this wasn't the time for tricks. He heard another drip. The figure had drawn nearer. Asada hadn't seen it move, but somehow it was moving. He backed away involuntarily, clutching at Yosuke's forearm without meaning to. He tried to find courage, since he could no longer manage nonchalance. But then he heard another drip. The figure was even closer. Asada discovered he wasn't moving backwards anymore. Instead, he couldn't move at all. Yosuke was similarly frozen, his breathing coming in shallow, stifled gasps. He heard another drip. Then another. Then another. The shadowy figure stepped into the moonlight. But there was no puppeteer's hood to be found. Instead, there was a cascade of long, dark hair. Okiku. The resemblance to the puppet was uncanny. Her pale white shift was pristine, despite her wet appearance. Her hair swayed ever so slightly in the wind. Her beauty was unearthly. Asada reminded Yosuke that they had nothing to fear. They had prayed at a shrine to Okiku in the city. They had not harmed her. She was a tragic, lost spirit, nothing more. He heard another drip. Yosuke's eyes bulged in fear. He hissed that she didn't look tragic. She looked angry. He tugged at his master's robe, telling him they should leave. Asada heard one more drip. An eerie silence fell over the courtyard. No more drips, just emptiness. Okiku's hair spilled over the window frame like water as she climbed into the room. Asada only now realized Yosuke had fled down the hallway. They stood looking at each other, ghost and man. He could see her ashy teeth between the strands of her dark hair as she began to count. 1, 2, 3. Asada knew he should run, but she was just so beautiful and so close. 4, 5, 6. He wanted to tell her he understood. He was going to tell her story. The world would know her pain. 7, 8, 9. Okiku opened her mouth to scream, wider and wider and wider, until she swallowed him whole. In his book, Yurei, the Japanese Coast, folklore scholar and translator Zach Davison writes that tatari, or location-based curses, are the most frightening to the Japanese. These spirits cannot be reasoned with, and they cannot be cleansed. So once you set your foot on the cursed ground, the spirit will find you, no matter what help you seek. Davison also likens tatari hauntings to recorded loops, as they proceed forward in repetition regardless of past or present events. This aspect of the legend, along with the visual appearance of Okiku, inspired the horror novel Ringu, its film adaptation of the same name, and the 2002 English version, The Ring. Like Okiku, Ringu's tragic ghost, Sadako, was abused and killed by a man before being thrown down a well. The disturbing image of the waterlogged girl with her obscured face has become iconic in horror, and that image owes everything to Okiku and her tragic demise. Himeji Castle is one of Japan's greatest national treasures, one of the few large-scale historic sites left untouched by the invasion of the West and the devastation of World War II. Each year, millions of people visit the fortress, each filing past and snapping a picture of the stone well, which is now covered by a large metal grate. Himeji Castle closes at sundown, so there's no way for the average ghost hunter to plan a visit between 1 and 3 a.m., the hours of Okiku's nightly haunting. We don't envy the castle's security guards, however. Let's hope they can stay awake and quickly count to 10. Thanks again for tuning into Haunted Places. We'll be back on Thursday with a new episode. And don't forget to come back on Tuesday for our Urban Legend series, available only on Spotify. You can find more episodes of Haunted Places and all other originals from Parcast for free on Spotify. I'll see you next time. Haunted Places was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler. Sound design by Kenny Hobbs. With production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Aaron Larson. This episode of Haunted Places was written by Lil D. Ritter and Jennifer Roche, with writing assistance by Alex Garland. I'm Greg Polson. Don't forget to follow Haunted Places Ghost Stories for the spookiest thrillers ever imagined, collected from all around the world and all throughout time. Alistair Murden brings a new story to life every Thursday. Follow Haunted Places Ghost Stories free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.